having an expert working with you to help you understand, first of all, what do you own as a family? How is it characterized? How is it treated? What piece of this do I potentially want to ask for? Maybe what piece of it do I potentially not want to take under any circumstances? That's a really useful time. And then, of course, if you've already come to a settlement agreement and now you're having to implement that agreement and perhaps administer a really meaningful settlement on your own for the first time, having a certified divorce financial analyst at your disposal can be incredibly helpful in making that first kind of suite of decisions.
Your hosts have earned a reputation as fierce and effective advocates inside and outside of the courtroom. Both partners are experienced trial attorneys who have been board certified in family law by the Texas Board of Legal Specialization.
Okay, well, thanks for tuning into For Better, Worse, or Divorce, our podcast where we provide you with tips and insight on how to navigate divorce and child custody situations. I'm Brian Walters. Today, I'm joined by Sarah Cuddy, financial advisor and certified divorce financialist with Baird. Thank you for joining us, Sarah.
Hey, thanks for having me on the podcast. I'm happy to be here.
My pleasure. Well, let's start by telling us a little bit about yourself. We'll start with something interesting, like where you were born and grew up, or something out of the ordinary other than just our work lives.
Oh, goodness. So many interesting things. I was born and raised right here in Houston, Texas. And I suppose the most interesting thing I can tell you about myself is that I did not grow up wanting to be in finance or even in a technical field. I actually grew up wanting to be in the fine arts and pursued a career as an opera singer for a period of time. Not a great way to make a living. So I did switch gears and go back to school and landed here in finance. And I'm very glad that I made that life choice.
Very good. Yeah, our office is not far from the Houston Opera, actually. I drive by it every day on my way to work. And let's talk a little bit about your professional career, where you went to school, licensures, and what you do.
All that fun stuff. Okay, well, I won't list every license because there's frankly far too many, but I'll hit the highlights. So my undergraduate degree, which of course was in music, was over at Sam Houston State University. Go Bearcats. When I decided to move into a technical field, I went to the University of Texas at Austin to get my Master of Business from the Red McComb School of Business. And of course, once you enter this kind of career, your education doesn't end there. Naturally, I've got all of the normal licenses you would have as a financial advisor. But what makes me uniquely set up to be a really good advocate and financial expert in the context of a divorce is that I have the Certified Divorce Financial Analyst designation. And I'm also a certified financial planner. And that's a very powerful combination because it means that I am well acquainted with financial aspects of divorce, but I've also got all of the other training that comes with being a CFP, which you can kind of think of as a mini master's in financial planning. It's a very powerful combination. Of course, I've got 13 years of industry experience. And let's see, my divorce practice has been ongoing for 6 years now.
Very good. Well, tell us what a certified divorce financial analyst does, maybe in a little more detail, because that's certainly what would be of interest on this podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't want to bore you with any of the financial planning or investing stuff. So a divorce financial analyst, and this is the way I typically will couch it to clients in the context of their cases, I'm often there just to do math and help them think through the financial implications of any given decision. But let me make it a little bit more concrete. There are a few different times when you're going to want a CDFA on your team. One of those times is in a collaborative case or a cooperative case where you as a couple have decided, hey, let's not fight about this. Let's sit down together, perhaps with the supervision of our attorneys, and try to figure out how to divide this estate in a way that benefits us as much as possible so that we don't have inefficiencies. And having a financial expert at the table can, first of all, help you come up with some kind of creative and novel ways to do division, but it can also help you think through some of those questions that inevitably come up that, frankly, your typical family law attorney isn't necessarily equipped to handle. Family law attorneys are legal experts. And as a side note, I don't give legal advice because I'm not a legal expert. Similarly, if you've got financial questions, you want to have a financial expert. Another time when a CDFA might be useful is if you are in a litigated or a contested case. And you're maybe a party in the relationship who doesn't have a lot of information about the finances. And maybe you've got just a ton of basic questions. So having an expert working with you to help you understand, first of all, what do you own as a family? How is it characterized? How is it treated? What piece of this do I potentially want to ask for? Maybe what piece of it do I potentially not want to take under any circumstances? That's a really useful time. And then, of course, if you've already come to a settlement agreement and now you're having to implement that agreement and perhaps administer a really meaningful settlement on your own for the first time, having a certified divorce financial analyst at your disposal can be incredibly helpful in making that first kind of suite of decisions. Maybe not on an ongoing basis, maybe on an ongoing basis. That's really a client by client decision.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, my experience is that typically in a marriage that one of the two parties typically does most of the financial, may or may not be the earner or high earner, but they and the other spouse sometimes has remarkably little information. Sometimes that's by design. Sometimes they kind of keep their finances separate, even though that's not what the law would say is the legal situation with it. Other times they're just not that interested, or, you know, they've got better things to do, or they're busy with the kids or whatever it is. And so I'll have both folks walk in. I'll have, you know, the ones that know what's going on, the experienced ones, and they'll have a spreadsheet and they'll say, here's, you know, would be the fair way to divide it. And if I happen to be representing the other spouse, they'll walk in and I'll say, well, how much do you guys have? I don't know. Do you have any retirement assets? What's a retirement asset? You know, that kind of stuff. So it's obviously the second example is probably someone who's much more in need of assistance and help with it. But sometimes even the other ones are. I mean, sometimes folks are, even the ones that are running the finances, are not realistic about the value of things or how they might be able to be used in the future or how they're going to be divided. So I've rarely seen additional knowledge be a problem, right? It's usually helpful. So in my experience, at least.
Well, and you bring up a really good point, and that's how to value assets, right? So a lot of times we can just pull an account statement and it'll tell us what something is worth. But take the house, for example. There's a few different ways you can skin that cat, right? You can go to Zillow, which I don't necessarily recommend. You can look at your tax appraisal, which I also don't recommend. You can get a comparative market analysis. You can pay somebody for an appraisal. And how you end up, you know, valuing just that particular asset really kind of depends on the dynamics of the case. I typically err on the side of what can we agree to? Because if we can agree to something, we don't necessarily need to spend family resources on hiring yet another professional. You know, and I think you'll agree with this. There's a balance to be struck between, do we want to bring on any and every type of expert that we possibly can so that we have no unanswered questions, or do we want to try and be really picky about how many different types of experts we engage? You know, another thing we sometimes run into are pension benefits, and those are becoming really, really rare. But, you know, if you have a pension benefit in play, the question is always, well, how do I pop this into the spreadsheet? And that's another time when having someone who's got some experience on board can really be helpful. Or their expert might have come up with a valuation and you may be looking at that and going, I don't know, this doesn't smell right. And then having your own expert come in and say, well, either yes, this is a normal, you know, I see this valuation and the methodology was valid, or I see this valuation and here are some things about the methodology that kind of get my attention. So that gets maybe into a little bit more granular detail than you wanted, but those are the types of things that I find really interesting about the work.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, and you're right about the pensions, although we still have some big employers here, typically the oil companies, that still have the old-fashioned pensions, although they are extremely complicated, usually over 100-page guide to them. So that's a whole other subset of questions. So, well, I know I've talked about it a lot with Jake and others on this podcast about tips or suggestions about going through a divorce. I think it's one of the most common questions I get asked either through this podcast or during consults or just run into people. But do you have any suggestions or tips for people that might be either going through or about to go through a divorce or considering starting a divorce?
Yeah, so many, but I'll try to be succinct. And I want to answer your question more by kind of giving people a framework to think about their divorce. We often think of divorce as strictly a legal process. And so obviously an attorney is the first thing people think of. But let's take two steps back and realize a few things. There are three key elements to any divorce case. There's going to be your emotional element, right? You didn't marry this person just because you thought it was a good business decision. You married them because you loved them. You thought that this, you know, this, you had a romance, you fell in love. And so the end of that relationship, whether it's been over for a long time now, or this is new and fresh to you, you're going to have feelings. Those feelings are probably going to be really big ones. And if you're not finding a way to to deal with the emotions that are coming up with this process, it's probably going to cloud your ability to make good, sound decisions. So I really strongly encourage people to attend to the emotional element of their divorce. And that can mean a lot of different things. That might mean engaging a good therapist, even if it's just for the period of time that your divorce is going on. It could mean joining a divorce support group. Those are, you know, there's all kinds of support groups out there online and in person. Or it might just mean hitting the gym on a regular basis. Whatever it means to you, finding a way to deal with the emotions that are coming up is going to help you get through the process a little bit. I don't want to say easier, right? But with a little bit less pain and distress. Obviously, the second element is financial. Now, if your case is very, very simple, you don't necessarily need an expert. But if you're finding that the finances are really causing you to feel apprehension, or if you just have lots of questions that you're not getting answers to, that's a time to really think about finding an expert. And the expert that you hire is going to depend on the needs that you have. So you may not need a CDFA. You might need a tax accountant, right? You might need a CPA. You might need a forensic accountant. So there's lots of different types of professionals that help out with divorces. So really interrogate the nature of the questions that you have and try to hone in on that expert who's going to serve you best. And then obviously, attorney. And this is where I'm going to climb up on my soapbox just a little bit. The choice of attorney has such a huge impact on your case. And it's not just about good attorneys versus bad attorneys. That's not what I'm getting at. But the type of attorney you choose has to fit the type of case that you have. So if you want to mediate or possibly even settle around the kitchen table and you hire a bulldog litigator, that's not a great fit. That bulldog litigator is not going to be interested in helping you negotiate a settlement outside the courtroom. Whereas if you know you're headed for litigation, but you hire someone who only does collaborative cases, they're not going to be ready to charge into a courtroom and you know, do what they need to do to get you the result you need. So yes, you absolutely must have an attorney. Folks who come to me and say, yeah, we're just going to use some forms online makes my skin crawl, because divorce laws are unique state to state, as you well know, and as your audience well knows, and you've got to have a legal expert, but you've got to have the right kind of legal expert. So know the three elements of divorce, find a way to service all of them. And then the last bit of advice that I'll leave folks with, and that's advice that I got from my own mother when I was going through my own divorce that she got during her divorce, was never get too hungry, too tired, or too lonely.
Yeah, that's good. Not only in divorce, probably just in life, in general, or parenting or any of those kind of things. So, very true. I think some questions that I often get from clients, potential clients that you might be able to talk about is, I get a lot of tax questions. So you mentioned a little bit earlier about a tax CPA. So when do we need to have an expert on that versus just kind of the run of the mill, like, hey, you know, this is taxable and retirement account and this one is not? Do you have kind of a rule or a dividing line between those things?
That is such a good question. It really comes down to whether we're trying to do forward-looking projections. And so oftentimes when I start getting questions like, who gets to take the child tax credit and how does that interact with maybe a joint custody agreement, right? So if we're trying to figure out filing into the future, I oftentimes will want to tap a CPA for that. But if the questions are simply, hey, how is this thing taxed? And can you estimate what the tax impact of maybe dividing it or selling it might be? That's solidly within the purview of a CDFA. I will take a little side trip and say, if someone has just their certified divorce financial analyst and no other credentialing, I would be very, very cautious about having them do anything on your case having to do with tax. And it's because the CDFA course curricula does not address taxes in a deep and meaningful way. It gives you the very, very, very basics. So the only reason that I'm willing to wade in is because I've also got that certified financial planner designation, but even that has its limits. So once you get into super complex questions of exactly the mechanics of a tax credit or claiming dependents, that's when you really need to start talking to a CPA.
Yeah, I agree. And fortunately, this is not that common of a problem. I've had situations where a tax, an unknown tax liability popped up 5 years after the taxes were due. The IRS sent them a letter post-divorce saying, by the way, you owe many hundreds of thousands of dollars to us. And I mean, that was a very unpleasant surprise for everybody, right? Not only had the divorce been expensive and a hassle, but then suddenly this thing dropped out of the sky that was, hey, by the way, you owe us a bunch more money. And just trying to uncork that and figure that out. And yeah, it's quite the thing. Luckily, that's very rare. And the big problem, I think, was that the way their decree was drafted when they got divorced, which I didn't do, didn't address that. I mean, normally we would address it and just say, basically, look, if $250,000 drops out of the sky, you know, you get a tax refund or a, you know, whatever, you're going to split it or whatever you're going to do, or vice versa. If you have to suddenly pay some unknown amount of money unsuspectingly, you're going to have to split it. But they didn't do that. And so we had not only that unpleasant surprise, but then a fight over who was going to pay it. It was quite the thing, but that's pretty rare, like I said. Another question I get is typically is about retirement accounts, both Social Security and otherwise. I think I can address Social Security, which is that it's not divisible. You're going to get what you get from the government, and the state of Texas can't do anything about it, which can be really kind of unfair if you think about it. If somebody paid into it, then they're going to get more on the other end. That's probably something to consider, what we call a gray divorce, you know, an older divorce, something to consider. And I think courts will take that into consideration. But as far as retirement plans go, there are surprising differences. Roth IRAs, regular IRAs, there's some stuff that the taxes have essentially already been paid except for the capital gain and otherwise. And so I have seen a lot of people do these we all do property spreadsheets, you know, basically an Excel spreadsheet of your assets and debts when you're getting divorced. But I've seen that pretty frequently where attorneys will just put whatever the statement says is the value on the account, even though there might be a 40% tax hit coming versus, you know, an account that, let's say, a house that's, you know, you still can do your tax, one-time tax break on it or whatever. And there's essentially no taxes on it. And so is that something you can help on with understanding retirement accounts, different types, and also pensions, you know, defined benefit versus defined contributions? Is that something that you can help on as well?
It is. And it's something we see pretty often. In fact, you'll almost always have at least one party at the table saying, well, what about the taxes? So a few rules of thumb to keep in mind. If you're going to tax impact one asset, you have to tax impact the entire estate. And that can get into some really tricky territory. So, you know, make up some case facts. Let's say that we have two folks, both of them in their 50s. So they're not quite retired yet, but they're getting pretty gosh darn close. And we have an estate where we have a home. We have maybe some investing accounts subject to capital gains taxation. And we have some retirement accounts, which are taxed like ordinary income. And so for our novice listeners, ordinary income is the type of tax you pay on your labor. So when you get a paycheck, ordinary income taxes tend to be less favorable than, say, capital gains taxation, which is how houses and taxable investing accounts are taxed. And so you'll have someone sitting at the table saying, well, look, this entire 401k, this million-dollar 401k, it's not worth $1 million because when I take the money out, I'm going to have to withhold 20% for taxes. Okay, that's an absolutely fair point. Here's where we run into a philosophical problem. I, as the financial expert at the table, having shepherded people to and through retirement, know that that account is going to remain tax-deferred for as long as possible, and in fact, probably until that person's age 72. So how can I accurately model all of that tax deferral and then model the tax hit from age 72 and beyond? It's really kind of a thorny question. So typically when I have someone at the table saying, hey, what about taxes? I'll kind of go through that whole song and dance. And often I'll say, look, I understand that there is a difference. So here's how we allow for it. We allocate the taxable categories 50-50. So you get half of the retirement stuff, you get half of the capital gain taxation stuff. And that is a way to kind of apportion the tax burden at least somewhat fairly.
Yeah, I agree. It is not an easy solution or answer in any way, but that's why you need some professional help. I think I know a lot about it, although I'm not a tax person, but I actually had my CPA wreck me on something this spring when we were getting ready to file our tax return. And I was like, oh, okay. Good to know that. It was a good surprise, but still a surprise.
The table pointing out, like, I understand what you want to do here, but what you want to do is far more complex and difficult than you realize. And I'm sure that you guys run into that with legal stuff all the time. Someone will say, I want to put this thing in my decree. And you'll look at them and say, uh-huh, and how are we going to enforce that? Right?
That stops more agreements than anything is enforcing it. Well, you know, which is maybe sad because probably most people would follow things, but still, if they don't, I don't want to get the call saying, wait, I agreed to something and I can't make it happen. Not a good situation to be in. Okay, well, anything you want to add before we wrap up here?
Yeah, so I do have a little bit of a statement from our attorneys. They like
it. Those attorneys, darn it.
Yes. So they have asked me to remind you all that I am not an attorney and I don't give legal advice. I'm a financial advisor employed by Robert W. Baird and Company. So all of my advice is around finance and taxes only. Legal advice should only come from your attorney.
Very good. That makes sense. Okay. Well, that's all we have for today. If you like what you've heard, please do us a favor, write a review. We appreciate all your feedback, especially when it helps us better the podcast. If you're interested in reaching out to Sarah directly, we'll have her contact info below in our episode notes, or you can probably Google her and find her either way. Can't thank you enough, Sarah, for joining us today. If you have any follow-up questions to this episode or would like to talk to one of us directly about your family law situation, just reach out to us at podcast@waltersgilbreth.com or contact us directly through our website, waltersgilbreth.com, or call us, or all the different ways you can get a hold of people these days. I'm Brian Walters, and thanks for listening.
For information about the topics covered in today's episode and more, you can visit our website at waltersgilbreth.com. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of For Better, Worse, or Divorce, where we post new episodes every first and third Wednesday. Do you have a topic you want discussed or a question for our hosts? Email us at podcast@waltersgilbreth.com. Thanks for listening. Until next time.